If it's Wednesday, it's time.
And get that ball back to Felix again, and hopefully you're on a good run.
For Seattle's best baseball analyst.
How do you not feel good about that?
1-1 pitch to Blauer. Swung on and belted deep to center field. Lop into the track. The wall. Fly away.
Mike Blauer's.
The kid from Tacoma gets the first two runs of the American League Championship Series in.
With Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Oh, we look forward to it every week here with Bob, Groz, and Tom. It's the Mike Blauer Show. We bring in the best analyst in baseball with us every week. He's with us on the Venue Kings hotline. Hello, Mike.
Gentlemen, what would you like to talk about today?
I don't know. We were racking our brains going, what are we going to ask him about now? I got nothing left. No, I mean, last night was so awesome. I'm sure you've been talking about it a ton. We had a chance to talk to Service earlier about it. I mean, what a special night. And it's one of those nights, Mike, where yeah, the pitcher was great. Paxton was awesome, but the defense behind him, and it wasn't just Seager, it wasn't just D. Gordon, it wasn't just Gamble, it was the way that Zunino called the game, it was Healy at first base. I mean, you talk about an incredible team effort last night. That was spectacular.
And I think also some run support helps in those situations.
Oh, yeah, five runs.
Five runs, including a home run by Zunino. I think he's on a short list now of guys that have hit a home run and caught a no-hitter in the same game. He's like one of five or six, so a pretty cool night for Mike also. But the defense was awesome. Mike called a terrific game. I think James ended up shaking him off just one time throughout the entire game, executing everything. But you have to get some luck, and you have to have some great defense typically in those types of games, and that's exactly what we saw last night, even though James, I thought, was just dominant.
When did you think that it was a possibility, I guess I'll put it?
Actually, a little bit earlier in the game than most of the time, Groz, for me. And there's a couple of reasons why. I thought that for James, his velocity was starting on the uptick when he got into the fifth inning. And then it was the best curveball I've seen him have all year long. In the 16 strikeouts, it was fastball, slider, cutter, basically. And last night was his best curveball, and they couldn't handle it. And considering the Jays and their struggles this year offensively as far as picking up base hits, they were 13th going into the game last night, 14th as of today. But they can't hit the ball out of the ballpark. And I thought that there was matchups there that really played into the possibility of James getting there. One, they had a tough time getting hits anyway. And with that high fastball, I knew that they were going to be trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And it was just impossible to catch up to it when he's at the top of the zone. And his command of the top of the strike zone was incredible last night. And so I thought early on in the fifth there was a chance. And then by the seventh inning, you know, just like everybody else, you're just hoping it'll happen. And that's really when the guys turned on the defense behind him. And to watch him in the ninth inning come out and hit 100 was fantastic. So, but I thought early on there was a chance for him to get there.
Mike, we've heard players, defensive players in the past, talk about how – I remember Jeff Kent saying he was unaware, one of the Astros teams he was on, he was unaware that they had a no-hitter going. If you are aware and you're playing, say, third base or whatever, how much more pressure do you feel about that?
I played in a couple of them, and I was very aware. I think as a player, you know what's going on, but I find it hard to believe that you don't know what's happening if you're rolling out there in the seventh inning and your starter has a no-hitter going, because I think that's when, as a player, you feel like it's realistic that this could happen. Playing defense, I thought that James actually, I think it's more difficult if you're involved in a perfect game, at least I would think so, because a mistake that you make as a fielder could cause something really special for that pitcher and your teammate if you make an error or something like that. In a no-hit situation, you're almost gladly taking error trying to make a play as opposed to giving up hit. And the couple that I played in, I thought it was a lot of fun, especially the one with Boz, just because I'd been around a little bit longer. And we were obviously a close group, and I love Boz, and it was awesome when he was able to do it. But for me, it was just a lot of fun. There's an electricity that's going on. And even though nobody's going to say anything to the starting pitcher, we're all talking about it at the other end of the bench. You know, just it's so much fun. And especially with somebody like Boz out there, a little bit different with Pax, because Boz was somebody that was going to have the hitters put the ball in play, not a big strikeout guy, where James could certainly take care of a lot of the business himself.
I know everybody's different out there, but in that situation, you said you've been in a couple of these games. Are you hoping that the ball is hit to you? Or are you saying, get that ball to me? Or are you kind of maybe tense going, geez, I hope they pop it up or he strikes them out?
It's all Marvis Kell.
You know what? You know, I remember it when in Boz's no-hitter. I remember thinking to myself, it was actually neither of those things. It was make sure that I'm in the right spot as far as where I'm supposed to be lined up defensively, and then make sure that I'm super ultra-aggressive on everything. In other words, sometimes you get into games and you make a play, but you may not try to make the throw because it just doesn't make sense, or you don't have a real good chance and you don't want to throw it down the line and make one mistake into two mistakes. In that situation, all that goes out the window. I'm going to try to catch everything, and if I have to die for it, I'm going to throw it over there as quickly as I possibly can. And hopefully if things don't work out, I end up with an error. But I didn't think about, I hope they hit it to me, or I don't want it to hit to me. I just wanted to be ready to make any sort of play that was necessary to help out my teammate. And I think that most guys probably have that on their mind in that situation. And I don't think that you make the type of defensive plays that we saw last night unless those guys are thinking along those lines.
Having said that, how incredible was that play by Kyle Seager?
It was, you know, I felt bad because Aaron was on the call and I jumped right in the middle of it because I was just so excited about how awesome that play was. Like, I can't even, there are a number of elements to that play that were incredible, and the more I saw the replay of it, the better it was getting. The fact that when he makes the diving play to his backhand side, that was terrific to make the stop. But then when you see it, we had an angle on the replay where he almost catches it, and the ball is actually past him and behind him, which makes it even more difficult. And then to watch him get up and get rid of the ball quickly and basically not even look to first. That ball was on its way by the time he saw what was going on, and that comes from years of practice and experience to get rid of it like that without really knowing what's going on. And all of it came together like that, because he was aware that it was Pilar, the center fielder, who was running down the line, and he didn't have time to set his feet. He had to get rid of it quickly. And that goes back to what I was talking about earlier. When you get into those situations, you're going to do everything you possibly can to make a play. And for Kyle, he probably got rid of that ball a little quicker than he normally would just because of the situation and the runner that was going. And it was fantastic. I don't know what the probability is for a Major League third baseman to make that play, but I don't think that there's anybody that could have done it any better.
Does Paxton seem like a more confident pitcher in general to you this year? Or is there a difference at all?
I think that and Scott talked a little bit about it after the game, and it's something that I sensed, and I talked to Shannon about it on the postgame show last night. The thing that I get from James now is a couple of years ago when they wanted him to show some emotion out on the mound, to get excited and to get fired up in situations that called for it. And I think when James first, he understood that and he knew why that was the case, and at times it seemed a little bit forced because it's not in his nature. It's not who he is as far as his personality goes. He's grown from there. Last night, watching him and listening to him, hearing him throw his fastball those last couple of innings, and I could hear it all the way up in the booth, the aggression and basically throwing the baseball with anger and challenging guys, and just the expression on his face and the fist pump was awesome. And then to see just the smile on his face and the excitement when D. Gordon makes a play, or when Kyle made a couple of plays, knowing what was going on and being aware of all those things and showing all that, that's where he's grown the most for me. Again, because it's genuine across the board.
Mike, how cool is it to see a couple of these guys that are really animated, a couple of new guys, and D. Gordon and Ryan Healy's got an intensity to him, and you see him after that Seager play, and he's yelling, he's pumping his fist. I mean, you don't see that a lot in baseball, where you guys are real demonstrative or real animated like that, but it seems like such a nice element to this team.
It's a great thing for this team, and you're right, you don't see it a lot, but I think, again, it has to be something that is genuine, and for D, that's just his personality. I'm watching the guys down on the field right now, and they're getting loose, and he's laughing and having a great time with the guys, and that's just him every day. I think for Ryan, you know, and I know I do, but we forget sometimes that although he hit 25 home runs last year, he's a fairly young player as far as Major League service time goes, and so to be in that situation for him last night, I'm sure, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it. I'll go down to the field and talk to him in a little bit, but I'm sure it probably felt like a playoff game for him and how excited he was about everything, and I love it. I don't think that there's anything wrong. I love that he's able to show that excitement for the play that Kyle made and for the result and what it meant to Pax. I think all those things are just pluses across the board. I think it's refreshing to see.
Back-to-back performances by James Paxton, the likes of which haven't been seen really probably since the days of Randy Johnson, certainly from a left-hander. You played with him. You talk a little bit, Mike, about the sense of confidence having a guy who, if in fact James Paxton is continuing to roll out starts like this, it gives to an entire team.
Yeah, I think it's it's one of those things that you can't measure it, but it's critical. Just because of the way that these guys play, I think they have 8 come-from-behind wins this year, which is towards the top of the league. They can swing the bats. They can hit pitching late in games, but you're going to lose some tough games along the way too. And I think if you lose a tough game and then maybe you get beat up the next day, all of a sudden you lost a couple, but you know your guy is coming back around. And if you can score him a couple of runs, you're going to win and put that behind you. I think that's really important. You mentioned Randy. Randy was a stopper for a reason. We knew every fifth day that if we did our job, we were going to have a really good chance to win games, and that would keep you away from any long losing streaks because those things are going to happen over the course of a summer. But you can always look towards that guy that you have, and James has just been dominant in those last few outings. And you know what? We saw some of that from him last year. I believe it was the month of July where, in my mind, I thought he was the best pitcher in the American League, if not baseball. And you really got a really good idea of just how dominant he could be and how consistent he can do it. I think that the one thing about this game is all these guys strive to be consistent and be the best that they can be. And when you get into a certain area where maybe at the plate things have slowed down and you're really swinging the bat well, or when you're on the mound and you're able to command the strike zone and just cut it loose, you have those moments. And all these guys are really good and they're here for a reason and they can hang on to it. The best ones can do it for a longer period of time. That's something that I would see with Edgar all the time. I could get hot. And you know, you go through it, and in the last 2 or 3 weeks, Edgar could do it for 2 or 3 months. And that's the difference between the great ones, and I think that Pax has the ability to do that.
Yeah, I realize not everybody has the Astros rotation. In fact, nobody does. But from what you've seen so far this year, Mike, doesn't it feel to you like the Mariners should be able to hang with any of these teams? I mean, the AL has a lot of great teams right now, or good teams anyway, but the Mariners should be right in the thick of that, right?
They should, and I think, you know, look, they're in a tough division. We just saw the Angels, too. That's a difficult team to deal with also. Now, they have their own issues, but, they can play, and they have some guys that can swing it also. So, you know, it's a tough division, but I love their lineup. The back end of their bullpen, I think, over the course of the summer is going to pay big dividends for them. It's just a matter of things shaking out with the rotation, and it appears that that's starting to happen. We'll see what Wade LeBlanc has tonight, but it'll be LeBlanc in the entire bullpen. Everybody's ready to go in this one tonight. But, again, with the way Pax is going, if he can stay on a run, for the majority of his starts and take that sort of effort out there, not no hits or not 16 strikeouts, but just that normal. If he gives you 7 or 8 every time he goes out there, keeps the score down so you get on the board early, which I think is important for this team. I think they can play with anybody.
Mike, you've been calling games for this team for a long time. Where does this team rank just in terms of entertainment value? I know it's still early in the season. You're 34 games in, but I look forward to these games, not so much because they're winning. I mean, that's great, but they're just a fun team to watch. More specifically, the offense with D. Gordon, as soon as he gets on base, it becomes exciting. Is he going to steal? How many bases is he going to steal? I mean, it's a different lineup. It's just a fun team to watch. Where does it rank for you?
I think I probably towards the top. This is my 12th year doing this on TV, and I think it has to be at the top of the list. And D. Gordon is terrific at the top. And what is he? You know, he's got. I think he's third in hitting now after getting 3 more hits last night. I think Segura is a blast to watch. He's up there. He's hacking away. He's having a terrific year driving in runs hitting for a high average. He can also run, but he's a lot of fun. And then you have Robbie, who, to me, is kind of the anchor of this whole thing. He's the guy that's going to go work counts. He's going to use the entire field. He's the pro. Everybody looks towards him. There's never any panic there. You have Nelson hitting the ball 450 feet. Mike Zunino coming into his own. You have Ryan Healy, as you were talking about earlier, is an exciting player. He's been playing really well, especially lately. And then you have the start of Haniger, and we're still not sure what type of player he's going to be, other than he's going to be really good if he can stay healthy. And he's off to a great start. So you start adding all those things up. They're all different, which I think makes it a lot of fun. And they can score in a variety of different ways, where in the past I think they became one-dimensional at times, maybe leaning on the home run a little bit too much. That's different from this club right now, especially when you consider what they're hitting as far as average goes and what they're hitting with runners in scoring position as a team. You just have a sense of confidence up and down the lineup that somebody's going to get it done on a given night, and that's what we've seen so far.
After you got a look at him in person, what did you think of Shohei Ohtani?
Impressive. I'll be curious to see him some more as far as swinging the bat. It's kind of a tough schedule, I think, for anybody to be on when he's not going to be in the lineup on the day before or the day after. But, boy, you have to be impressed with that arm. It's electric stuff. That fastball is special. He, you know, when he's throwing 98, 99 at the bottom of the strike zone, there aren't many guys that have that sort of life and carry to their fastball. It's different. And then you put the split on top of that. I thought that part of it was really special. I'd like to see him some more as a hitter. I think we just saw the one game that he hit in and hit a double the other way. The ball jumps off his bat, I can tell you that. But that'll be the one for me. If he can handle that, that'll be really impressive in my mind, just because I think it's just so difficult for anybody to try to do it, especially how special he is on the mound.
Is it strange for you to see Ichiro out there in full uniform, batting gloves and wristbands?
You know what? It's funny because at first, yes, but then you have situations like they had yesterday, and you can tell how much he means to the club. He was right in the middle of the party after that last out was made yesterday, and you know, I think it's pretty cool. It's a cool thing. There's no downside to any of it, and the
sure.
guys really like having him around. So I think it's kind of fun watching him. You know, he's out there playing catch right now. He comes out early, does his running routine, all the same stuff. Nothing has changed other than he's just not in the dugout during the game. But I think that he provides a lot to this club in their clubhouse, after the games, on the travel, all those different things. I think it means a lot to him, and it obviously means a lot to these guys because they have to accept it, and they certainly have done that. That has not been a problem at all.
Can you go ask him if he knows who Tom Brady is? Did you see that story?
I did not.
There's a story out that
just have Gary Hill show it to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically,
you're gonna get a huge laugh out of him, Mike.
And okay. I want you to ask after you read it. I just want you to ask him that question. Okay.
I just by listening to you guys, I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen.
No, it's not a bad story. It's actually kind of funny.
Yeah. It's not vulgar or anything.
No.
Well, sort of.
Well, his response. Look at it.
Yeah. Check out the story and then go ask him because I'd be very very curious. Hey, Mike, okay. As always, great stuff, my friend. Hopefully we're talking about another big win tonight with Wade LeBlanc.
Yeah,
win
a series tonight. You bet.
Let's get it done, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, thanks, guys.
There he is. Mike Blauer's with us every week.
I disagree with him on one thing.
No, you don't.
If
don't
Paxton doesn't throw a no-hitter or have a 16-strikeout performance every time, I'm going to be disappointed.
Then you're going to go flash in the pan.
Yeah, this guy's nothing.
One-hit wonder.
J.J. Watt.
Oh, next he's going to start donating, raising money for
right.
people in need.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if Paxton starts tweeting out about himself about how great his workout routine is.
Jeez,
can you imagine?
We hear a lot about it just because he's trying to prevent injury.
Right.
We hear he's a workout maniac,
but he's not a look at me guy. He's the furthest thing from that.
How do you know? Maybe he's in there telling everybody in the clubhouse, hey, guys, you know what I did today? Personal best.
That's not happening. It's just not.
It's just
It'd be
not.
Like if Edgar walked around always talking about his double. You know, I had a pretty big double once.
Yeah, save the franchise.
Did you guys ever hear that call? Pretty good. It's a pretty good time for me. Yeah, that's, what a cool thing for Mike and those guys to be up there and call that. I mean, you start sensing just like everybody at home, all of us watching at home and just, you know.
Anticipating.
Did you
they're
guys?
Not saying anything. They're not, you know, they're, right. they're he's very superstitious. I mean, it's just.
I noticed Aaron kind of went out of his way to not say no hitter. Although he did say we got something special brewing.
Yeah,
a couple
he, said,
of times.
He said no hits in the ninth inning.
No hits, yeah.
Yeah.
No hits. But doesn't Sims usually.
He goes the other way.
Sims goes the other way on that, yeah.
And I kind of like it because people fire on him on Twitter and he's like, don't embarrass yourself. Stop it. You think I've got?
What do you want me to call it?
You think I've got some sort of power that what I say is going to impact this game? Stop it. Don't embarrass yourself.
Hey, Tom, I'm worried about your obsession.
What?
The thing in your hand.
What is this thing called again?
The fidget spinner.
The fidget spinner.
You can't let go of it.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, when I first heard of these things, I thought it was the most worthless invention ever. But
you've been spinning it for 3 hours.
It's awesome.
It's calming him.
It is. It's keeping me focused.
Yeah. Well, that's what they use it for.
Focused on the task at hand.
By the way, the 509 says, one-hit wonder? Yeah, right. He's a no-hit wonder.
Good one.
Well done, 509.
Hey, did you get the sense that because the game was in Canada last night that the crowd was...
A little more into it?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I wanted them to be, but I couldn't really tell. I saw a group of Blue Jay fans, people wearing Blue Jay jerseys, giving him a standing O when he was being interviewed on the...
Well, and then when he was flashing his maple
leaf. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, look, the casual fan may not know.
Right.
That he's from Canada?
That he's Canadian, exactly. Yeah.
So he made sure everyone knew.
Yeah.
You spun that 3 times since I brought it up.
Well, now I'm
doing
it more.
That thing's going to be spinning for the rest of the
Can
show.
Can they hear it? Can
Enjoy
they hear
that.
It on the radio?
Yeah. Let it hit,
no, you
let
can't
it hit
hear
the
it.
Screen. Somebody said you're about 1 year late on the fidget spinner fad.
1 year? Has it been a year already?
Yeah,
it's been out for quite a while.
It's the first time I've ever used one. And believe me, I am using it.
How'd you wind up with it?
It was just at my desk this morning. You wouldn't believe the crap that people leave at my desk.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just one of those things.
It's all those interns using your desk that don't know better.
Get up now.
Get up now. Who do you think you are using my computer, buddy?
Are you leaving? What are you doing?
Yeah. I got to take Frank to the vet. He's got a situation.
All right, we're gonna.
Well, as Ron Fairley would say, "See you later."
See you later. There it goes. Stilton does it.
Are you guys gonna listen to the?
I think we're gonna listen to Shaq and Barkley. Really go at it.
That was entertaining.
That was very entertaining.
Did you watch it last night?
Yeah,
it was pretty good.
I need to see it. I heard it, which was very entertaining, but I need to see it.
Yeah, there's a lot of talking over one another, but it's Shaq and Barkley. What the heck do you want?
It's Shaq with the takedown.
Yeah.
You got a clear takedown.
It's just so funny to hear him sort of raise his voice because it doesn't really get loud.
No.
Well, the reason why I got out of control is because Ernie Johnson wasn't there.
Yeah.
Ernie normally will rein them in.
Yeah, I was asking Tom. I'm like, hey, where's Kenny and Ernie in this whole thing?
Well, Kenny always backs out.
It was the other guy, the other studio host, whatever his name is. I forget. Yeah, he was just kind of overwhelmed.
Ernie Johnson's usually the guy who will step in on something
He usually sighs. He says, oh,
Tom, now you're staring at it.
You're going to be just as fascinated as he is.
You are.
With his
you're
fascination.
Obsessed with it now.
No, I'm
you're
not
fascinated with his fascination.
I'm worried about it. This is how it starts.
He's going to be okay. Father.
He's going to be okay. All right, coming up, you'll hear that interaction between Shaq and Charles Barkley when we eavesdrop next year with Bob Gross and Tom.
Bravo Golf Tango. The line is in. It's time now for the eavesdrop.
Nothing better than when old buddies spar, Tom Wassel. Where's your fidget?
It's right here. I got it.
All right. I am a little obsessed with it.
I'll keep it for the rest of the show.
Last night, the Toronto Raptors knocked out. I think it was last night, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they were knocked off.
Knocked out by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yes, they were.
Four straight games.
And did our buddy Dwayne Casey, did he actually bench DeRozan?
He did.
Okay.
He benched him, I think, before game three. And he also, by the way, was named Coach of the Year today by his peers.
Really?
Yes, he was.
And he might get fired.
He's probably going to get fired.
I mean,
they're getting tired of winning in Toronto.
Well, that's your philosophy.
It's always my philosophy.
Regardless of the sport.
Yeah. I mean, look, in the case of the Raptors, they won 59 games with the best record in the East.
Yeah.
They can't get past LeBron James, which has them in line with every other team in the league, basically.
Every NBA team must think that they're just a year away from getting the next Phil Jackson. It's just not going to happen. Most of these guys are, I won't say interchangeable, but what's the difference between...
I agree with you. I think when you got someone who's winning, it's better to keep winning.
That's what I mean, especially a place like Toronto and the NBA.
Well, Toronto reminds me of Sacramento in a sense, too. Sacramento had the one great run with Rick Adelman, and he just couldn't get him over the hump. Now, of course, Tim Donaghy and the referees were conspiring against them in that case. But they couldn't do it. They fired Adelman, and they've been garbage ever since.
Right. So this is a debate between Barkley and Shaq about whether or not it's okay for a head coach to bench his star player.
No, I think it was about whether or not the head coach has got to apologize to the star player. They've got to get along. This was the fight was about them getting along.
It may have started that way, but here's
okay,
let's play. It's about a minute long.
To repair his relationship with DeMar DeRozan.
No, I don't.
Yes, he does.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you have to, because listen, if your best player, you bench your best player.
Why was he benched?
That's not the point.
It is the point.
You don't disrespect your best player.
Listen.
If you don't have a great relationship with your best player, you're never going to win.
That's not true.
In your opinion.
True.
No, just because you say something, you're just.
That's not true.
No, it's not true.
Me and Pat Riley never saw eye to eye and what happened to my man went. So it's not true what you're saying.
I'm just letting you know what you did.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I was a role player, you're right. But you know what?
That's my point. I'm saying with your best player.
You don't know what you're talking about when it comes to championship.
I'm just telling you something.
Stop baby.
Wade carried you to that championship. No matter how much you scream, you laugh,
listen,
that does not
listen,
make you right.
Listen.
You're wrong in the city.
You can, and that's why you're in the way, because you're a baby. Stop babying these players.
I'm not babying no player.
He don't play. He got to sit his ass down. Period.
He got to repair.
He ain't got to repair nothing. He got to stop babying the players. That's why you ain't win.
He got to I didn't have Dwayne. I didn't have Dwayne Wade and Kobe Bryant carry me up and down the court.
So why you don't want to play?
Because
I got three fights. Finals MVP,
because,
Chuck.
Because you Google me, Chuck. Got, everybody Google knows me, you were a great player.
You see that?
Everybody
Google
knows
me.
You were a great player.
You don't know what you're talking about when it comes, Chuck.
No, that's not. That's not.
He got to step up and play.
We all didn't have other players carrying us up and down the court. You can yell as much as you want.
I got three finals MVP. Yeah, yeah, I mean,
you were a great player.
Thank
but you wouldn't have got him if you didn't have Kobe and Dwayne.
I will say.
You will say what, Kenny? What are you going to say in the middle of that conversation?
He does what a small guard should do when two big guys are going at it.
Exactly. Stay the heck out of the way. You know, I think the most interesting comment that was made in all of that was that Shaq actually admits that when he was in Miami for that championship he got with Dwayne Wade, he admitted he was a role player.
Yeah.
That was kind of a strange thing to hear. And I didn't realize he didn't get along with Pat Riley there.
I didn't either.
But the idea that a head coach can't come down on a star player. Doesn't the coach have to be able to do that? Or is the NBA so different, you just have to let the stars rule the roost?
Well, Dwayne Casey's going to get fired.
But this is DeMar DeRozan. This isn't Shaq in his prime.
I agree with you, but DeRozan's not going to get fired. He's got the guaranteed contract. I mean, look, part of being a great coach is figuring out that dynamic. And sometimes maybe it's not getting – sometimes, I mean, if you watch the Dream Team thing, didn't you, that documentary on him, the two-hour one? It's really good because they spent a lot of time talking about how Chuck Daly dealt with those guys and how he was a uniquely good choice for that. You know, and in particular – how he was going to deal with Michael Jordan.
Right.
This was the height of the Pistons hating the Bulls and that rivalry being. And now, how is Chuck Daly going to deal with Michael Jordan? And Daly figured it out. And I don't remember what it was. He didn't challenge him or anything like that. But he knew that he had to deal with. He had to get Michael Jordan to perform at his best.
He didn't go ego versus ego.
He decided that wasn't the way to go. Now, with other guys, he did. You know, he treated guys differently. So as a coach, you got to figure out. The only thing you got to figure out is how to get the most out of them. I agree with Shaq in that, you know, you don't have to be best buddies.
That's true.
But if the guy won't play for you after that, you're cutting your own throat.
You know, I think about this situation and I think about Ben McAdoo. Both coaches, you could argue, that they may have known that they were going to get fired in the event that the losing continued. I mean, certainly McAdoo probably knew.
Well, McAdoo had a losing season.
Right, when he benched Eli, and it was for different reasons.
Right.
He probably knew he
knew
was getting fired
was on
anyway.
The wall, right.
Right. Now, it Casey's team probably could have come back. We'll never know. But he probably knew that, you know what? If I'm going to get fired anyway, I'm gonna make a point.
I'm gonna do it my way.
You're right. Just to show that I'm not a pushover.
Right.
Because I need to be able to go into my next job interview and say, hey, I'm willing to deal with
well,
the personality.
It's also, hey, the guy's not playing hard. I gotta send a message
to the rest of the guys.
Right. This is the best way. I think. Look, I don't believe there's a coach out there that doesn't do what he thinks is the best thing to win. They're dependent on wins and losses. They are. No one's making. Very few guys are like Bill Parcells, who is the reason why, as a Cowboy fan, I hated him as Cowboys coach. A, because he brought in Tony Romo. That's not A. B is, and it happened here when Romo fumbled the snap, and they had that entire year, Terrell Owens, in his prime, who Parcells referred to as the player.
Right.
Dogged him, didn't use him, and then I think he was completely in it. If I remember the Seahawks game, they threw to him three times or something like that. He allowed his personal feelings to get in the way, in my opinion, in dealing with Terrell Owens.
You think he should have just let him run wild?
Should have let him play.
Oh, well, that's one
should've
thing.
Should have focused the offense on him.
That's one thing, yeah.
So I think from a coach's standpoint, very rarely do you see a guy do anything but that he doesn't think is going to help him win.
Belichick,
and I'm sure Parcells would argue that he thought that would help him win.
Yeah, unless you have a very specific formula like Belichick does, where you know it's the antithesis of what we're talking about. It's the less ego in that locker room, the better.
Right.
That's how you're going to win, because you get an Owens in there. It doesn't matter what the level of talent. It's almost not even useful in that situation. If you can get away with that, then you're the emperor and you get away. But most guys don't have that.
No, they don't. And as a coach in the postseason, you're doing what you – Dwayne Casey made the move. And look, I freely admit to being biased about Dwayne Casey because I like him a lot. But I guarantee you that Dwayne Casey made that move because he thought it would make the Raptors a better team. Not to settle a petty feud or anything like that. Now, if that happens, we've heard stories where that happens.
Mm.
You know, then the coach is right to be fired in that circumstance.
Do you think?
I think Toronto's making a mistake if they fire Dwayne Casey.
Well, I agree with that, actually. Do you think that Phil Jackson would have ever had the guts to bench Shaq?
I don't know.
Shaq never played. Because here's the thing. Shaq was never a bad player during that period.
No,
but
he was,
he made it pretty clear that he was more interested in playing in the playoffs than he was the regular season. Now, maybe that didn't matter to Phil because he knew that their win total was going to be such that it wouldn't matter. But still,
I think what mattered to Phil Jackson was championships, and how he got them was how he got them.
Right.
So I think he was, as a coach, you know, it's why it worked for him in most places. I mean, it worked for him with Shaq because at the end of the day, what was Shaquille O'Neal? A great player, incredibly motivated to be great.
Yeah.
It did not work as well with guys like, let's talk about Carmelo Anthony, who I don't think has the same motivation going for him.
Doesn't.
He's, you know, I mean, guys like Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant were guys about winning. They'd cut your throat to win a game.
Right. It's not just about, I mean.
So those guys you treat differently than you treat a guy who cares about his numbers, nothing else.
We talked about it at the beginning of the year right here. What decision did Scott Servais have to make for opening day?
Right. What was the point of making it?
What was the point of not starting James Paxton, who's the better pitcher?
Right.
To not get off on the wrong foot and start a mutiny in the locker room.
To avoid a negative circumstance.
Right. Not that necessarily would have happened. We don't know for sure that Felix would have caused a stink.
But why run the risk? Right? Yeah. Why run the risk when it's just one game, when it's really not that important?
Yeah.
As history showed, he had a decent start and it was much less a big deal than it could have been. Why make a big deal out of something that's not a big deal?
Yeah, I had a friend call me on the phone the other day. He's actually Mike Florio's producer at NBC, big Mariner fan.
Mm-hmm.
He, because of that decision, he accused the Mariners of not prioritizing winning. Now, if you want to make that argument over the last 17 years, ownership, et cetera, go ahead. I'm not going to do that with you. But for this one game, for opening day, it's meaningless.
It is.
It's meaningless. It
truly is one out of 162.
Right. I'm not. If Servais had started Paxton in that situation, even if it had caused a problem with Felix, which I don't think it would have, why do that?
Yeah, I think it would have annoyed him.
Yeah, probably.
There was no point in doing it. And it may have annoyed some other people in the locker room.
Maybe, yeah, because
to veterans that, hey, you know, this guy will toss you aside. I mean, there's all kinds of, that's not true necessarily, but there's all kinds of negative messages that can be sent that don't have to be sent.
Bob Gross and Tom, we sum it up next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny Dave and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny Dave and Moore every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Gross and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
Gross, before I sum it up here,
yeah.
Do you know who Alexi Lawless is?
Yes, I do.
He's a soccer commentator, right? Former soccer
player.
He's
a former soccer player.
Right, for the
USA,
USA,
yeah.
Not Olympic team, the World Cup team. Do you know who Wayne Rooney is?
Wayne Rooney is a legendary British soccer player.
Okay. I just saw something come down here on Twitter on TMZ Sports. I'm just interested in the quote because Lawless is a pretty big time analyst now for soccer, right?
Yeah, but he's been out of the game for a while.
Out of the analyst game?
No. Out of the soccer game.
Right, right. But he's up. He's like Aikman or something.
All right.
But the tweet reads: Alexi Lawless says Wayne Rooney is a has-been. Don't you at times wish that in sports like baseball or football that we have that kind of thing going back and forth between analyst and player? Like baseball players never turn on each other in that way. You're never going to hear John Smoltz do a Mariner game and say Felix is a has-been. See, he just doesn't have it anymore.
We just heard Shaq call Barkley a baby.
Right, but that's because they're friends.
Okay.
Like neither one of them said DeMar DeRozan's a bum.
No, that's true. I know what you mean.
Yeah, you might be more likely to get that in the NBA than in baseball or football. But
no, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I kind of wish that we got more of that from the people in the media who are responsible for giving us honest analysis.
Right.
You know?
Except they're really not.
Well, they're responsible for it. They just don't do it.
Well, that's not what they're asked to do.
What are they asked to do exactly,
Gross? In most cases now, analysts are asked to put a nice shiny bow on it as much as you possibly can.
That's probably fair, especially at the highest level.
Obviously, with Alexi Lawless, that is not the case. Although I don't know, what the context was of this.
I don't either, but I feel like I've seen in soccer before, maybe even with him.
Wayne Rooney's got a lot of hooligan fans, by the way.
What do you mean?
Hooligans, you know the hooligans.
I know what a hooligan is, but why are they fans of his?
Well, because he's an English player.
So hooligans like English players automatically?
Well, they're most of the hooligans are generally considered English.
I thought they were in Scotland. Well, they're kind of English, too.
They're kind of English, too.
Depending
right.
on how far back you go. As far as this no-hitter goes, just to sort of put a bow on, maybe actually the point is that we're not putting a bow on this. Okay. I think the story of this no-hitter has yet to be written. We went through all these great Mariner moments from the past, and a bunch of them were no-hitters. We had five of them before, including a perfect game. But with each one of those, we know basically what they are. We know what Randy's represents. It represents his coming out party as a Mariner, the first dominant pitcher in the history of this team.
Right.
Chris Bosio was kind of a blip, but the team was still getting better there. Felix deserved to have a perfect game. He did. Iwakuma has probably etched his name into Mariner history as well. But as far as Paxton is concerned, if this ends up being a special year for him or for the team, remember, it's so early in the year right now, we could look back at this as if it were a springboard towards something.
Absolutely.
They had a great win on Saturday night, but they got beat the next day by Ohtani. Okay. But they still proved that they can go out there and win a bunch of different ways. And having a guy like this in the rotation that they can depend on every 5 days to have these kinds of starts at least once in a while, I think is a really big deal. And hopefully we'll see what the good results of that is down the line.
It's a huge deal. You heard Mike Blowers talk about the feeling that the team had in 95 with Randy Johnson out there and kind of struggle to describe it a little bit, because it's more than just knowing every fifth day you've got a guy out there. There's a sense that when you have that guy out there, he gives you confidence all the way through the lineup, through the bullpen. I mean, everyone gets a rest. You know, if you just score a couple of runs, you're gonna win. It takes pressure off for a day. It does all kinds of subtle little things to a baseball team to have that guy out there, even on days that he's not pitching. And the Mariners had it with Felix Hernandez. They didn't have enough around him in the glory days. Now when you got a team that's 20-14 now, so playing really good baseball, with a great lineup, a great closer. You know, you can see you got a couple of guys having career years.
Right.
And now you have the ace. You've got, those are the elements that you need to have a successful season. I mean, those are the elements that you need to have. You would generally put, you know, what does it take to make a playoffs? Well, you need X, 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 and X.
Right.
Those would all be on the list of things that you need.
They check some, I think they check most of the boxes. When I asked Blowers before, you know, what have you seen from some of these other teams? Do the Mariners measure up? The answer is probably not completely, right? The Astros check all the boxes.
Right.
Yankees and Red Sox probably do the same. The Mariners are in that next tier, but that doesn't
mean they haven't done it yet. I mean,
right.
I think from the Mariners' standpoint, I mean, you're looking at a team that hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, and they could. It doesn't mean that they can't hang with those other teams. It doesn't mean that they can't frustrate a team like the Astros, right? I mean, the Astros frustrated the Mariners when the Astros were losing 100 games.
Right.
Right? I mean, it can play out that way. And the Mariners have a good team. You talked about Felix and when he was dominant, knowing what that, as a player, knowing what that meant every 5 days. This time there's a lineup that actually can give run support. You
right.
don't have to worry about sending Brendan Ryan up there to hit 140.
Right.
You know, this is a good lineup that can support a good pitcher.
A team that knows that they are, and again, you've got a lot of the boxes crossed off in order to have a successful season.
Right.
And it's been successful so far, so it's mainly a matter of keeping it up. And again, it's the thing about baseball. You have a little bit of time to celebrate, but we're rolling up the pregame right now.
Yeah.
It's time to play ball again.
You'll be hearing from Scott Servais on that pregame show. We talked to him earlier in the show. We're going to be talking with the GM, Jerry DePoto, tomorrow, as well as Gruz, the Nigerian nightmare, Christian Okoye.
Get out of town.
Talking to him tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour. Bob Gruz and Tom, 710 ESPN Seattle.